Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today with restaurants and big changes coming. Proof of vaccination coming to the city of Boston starting on January 15th. Adults will have to show proof of one vaccine shot to enter restaurants, entertainment venues, fitness centers in Boston. February 15, that requirement goes up to two shots. The same requirement will apply to children starting in March. That is a lot for restaurants to implement at the door. Meanwhile, Omicron, dominant strain in Massachusetts, cases and hospitalizations continue to climb. That will affect people's dining behavior as well. This is an industry that has struggled to weather this pandemic for nearly 2 years already. Now, coming up in a couple of minutes, we will check in with two restaurateurs as they head into another pandemic winter, and we'll take your calls. What restaurants are you supporting in this pandemic? Who are you trying to keep open? Why? Why is it important to you to support them? Give us a call. Give them a shout out. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We will get there. But first, we want to get a sense of how the business community as a whole is handling this new proof of vaccine mandate and what it means for them. We're going to talk here now to Greg Ryan, senior reporter with the Boston Business Journal. Greg, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So we are focused mostly today on restaurants, Greg, but entertainment venues, gyms also getting this requirement that you have to require proof of vaccination. It's a big step. What are you hearing from the businesses who will be impacted by this?
Yeah, I've been speaking with restaurant owners and owners of other types of businesses that will be impacted. And it's really, the reaction has been really divided. One common theme has been there's been some anxiety about the enforcement angle, you know, requiring staff to sometimes confront people who aren't presenting, you know, vaccination records and still want to come into a restaurant. So that's certainly a concern. But it really depends on who you talk to. You know, I spoke to one restaurant owner who said, this is great. This is going to make my staff feel safer knowing that everyone that's coming into the restaurant is vaccinated. Hung up the phone, called another restaurant owner. And he said, you know, I don't really know what this is going to do. I mean, I'm hearing on the news there are all these breakthrough cases with Omicron, the Omicron variant. I'm not really sure what this is going to mean for my staff.
Are you hearing from many restaurant owners, I've been hanging on by a thread, one more thing that keeps a patron out of my door and it pushes me over the edge?
Yeah, certainly. I certainly have heard that. Staffing is a huge issue across industries, but especially for restaurants, finding enough staff every night. And, some restaurant owners, they have employees who aren't vaccinated. Most I have spoken with, most employees are vaccinated. They might have one or two in a restaurant that aren't. But if you have to get rid of one or two people, because this policy applies to employees too, remember. So if you have to get rid of those people, it's going to make a difference.
So Boston's the first, but there are a number of other communities, as I understand it, looking to follow suit pretty quickly. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Boston Mayor Michelle Wu came out on Tuesday with a detailed plan, including the timeline you outlined. But a number of other cities and towns, including Cambridge, Somerville, Brookline, Salem, they've indicated they're going to be announcing similar plans. And other places that have said, okay, not right now, but this may be something we consider down the road, depending on how things go with Omicron.
So I know the press conference was on Monday. She had mayors like Joe Curtatone of Somerville there, Kim Driscoll of Salem, supporting some of these measures. So does it feel like we are headed in a regional direction, Greg?
I think so, although I think even in greater Boston, it's not going to be universal. I think a lot of the largest cities and towns are already on board, but some aren't. I know Newton, some people were looking to Newton in particular to see what they would do. So far Newton is in that category of wait and see. So it will be a bit patchwork even in greater Boston.
And what are you waiting and seeing on? What are you watching for next in your reporting?
One thing I think, and this is a little bit down the road, but one thing I'm particularly interested to see is the effect on those businesses that cater to families and children. I spoke with the CEO of the Boston Children's Museum. Children over five who are eligible for the vaccine are going to have to be vaccinated by, at least have one dose of the vaccine by March 1st. The uptake for kids 5 to 12 in terms of getting vaccinated has lagged behind adults in Massachusetts. The majority of kids 5 to 12 have not received the vaccine dose yet. So it'll be, I think some parents, even if they themselves are vaccinated, are a little bit weary about doing the same for their kids. So it'll be interesting to see what the effect on those types of businesses will be come March.
All right. We will watch too. Greg Ryan, senior reporter with the Boston Business Journal. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
I'm actually going to go to the phones real quick. We are taking your calls at 800-423-8255 as we focus on restaurants. Who are you trying to help keep open? Who are you making sure to patronize in your community during this pandemic and why? We've got Carrie on the line in Cambridge. Carrie, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm the owner of Grendel's Den, and so I am very much supporting Grendel's Den staying in business. And to that end, we've actually been requiring vaccination from our patrons who wish to dine indoors ever since May.
So, Carrie, this feels like a move that comes in line for you, even though it's Boston, you're Cambridge. Would you like to see this as a regional approach?
I think it's smart for restaurants to do best practices like this, but we really do need some help from the, we do need some support to do it properly. One of the challenges really is when we have people needing booster shots, and if that becomes a requirement, I got to tell you, the math is really tough. I mean, you're looking at three different dates. Are they 6 months apart? Are they on time for their vaccine? I mean, you really need a calculator here, and this is a lot to ask of somebody who's usually, you know, a doorman or a host, which is typically sort of an entry-level position. So you're dealing with trying to get this kind of staff to be an expert in, you know, vaccination policy, and really, it's a complicated calendar. It's a lot more must be born than born before this date.
Well, Carrie, owner of Grendel's Den in Cambridge, I'm glad you called, added your voice to this conversation. Appreciate it, and good luck. So keep calling. Let us know who you're supporting, your favorite spots from the corner deli to fine dining. Are you eating in? Are you eating out? Who are you trying to support? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. Two guests joining us now. Nancy Caswell is president of the group Massachusetts Restaurants United and owner of Brine in Newburyport and Oak and Rowan. Also with us is Emma Hollander, managing partner at the Starlight Management Company, which owns restaurants in Somerville, Cambridge, Newburyport, Plum Island. That includes Trina's Starlight Lounge, Parlor Sports, Audubon Bar, and the new Sunset Club on Plum Island. Nancy, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for speaking on this super important topic.
I'm glad to have you. And Emma, welcome to you, too.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Emma, I'm going to start with you real quick. I am mindful we're having this conversation at this moment of time, but next calendar year, which is just really a few days away now, we will be entering the third calendar year affected by this pandemic, second pandemic winter. How are you faring? How are your staff faring? How's it going?
I think that everybody's nervous. This was not the direction we thought we were going to be going in. And I think until recently, in the past couple weeks, everybody really started getting scared that, you know, what winter holds as the new variant is kind of whipping itself around the city. Business increased in October, and it seemed like things were going in the right direction. And I think at this point, everybody's just really, really nervous about what winter holds for us and the entire restaurant community.
Emma, can you take us to that moment? You said you thought things were going in a different direction, right? Business is up in October, feeling like we're crawling our way out of this. And then, right? So take me to the moment where you thought, oh, no, we might be swinging back the other way.
I would say it was probably 2 or 3 weeks ago when Omicron became very prominent, and especially in the restaurant community, we all are very close. And I think that business was great for October and November. And as soon as the pandemic really started, you know, knocking people out again, people were testing positive all over the city. Restaurants are starting to shut down again because they have too many positive cases in the, you know, within the business to even stay open and operational, that from a financial and safety aspect of it, especially people that, you know, don't get paid if they don't go to work or don't get paid if people don't come in. It's really terrifying.
Nancy, what was that moment for you, that oh no?
I would say similar timeline to Emma, with sales revenue kind of coming up. And then the reality kind of hit for us, I think, about 2 weeks ago, specifically in the city, where, you know, I think a lot of companies in our neighborhood in Fort Seaport were thinking about, you know, how to celebrate the holidays with employees. And we were starting to see these small group gatherings, you know, nothing really more than like 15 or 20 people. And in the last 2 weeks or so, we felt like everything was starting to cancel, to the point that even last week, almost all of the holiday parties that were booked were canceling and seeing if they could push them out.
And are you seeing increased worry about contagion within your workforce as well?
Well, I think that's the scary part about Omicron. It seems to be so contagious and so fast spreading. That's the biggest challenge right now is, you know, once you're seeing a positive or an exposure, the chance that, you know, four or five people are exposed within the operation is a lot more quicker than where it was with Delta, or, you know, even at the initial engagement back in, you know, March 2020.
Let's go to the phones. 800-423-8255 as we speak with Nancy Caswell, president of the group Massachusetts Restaurants United, and Emma Hollander, managing partner at the Starlight Management Company. We've got Joseph on the line in Amherst. Joseph, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I have two quick ones. One is, why aren't we allowing for people who have had COVID as a natural immunity, which all the major studies have been done, including a massive one in Israel, indicate are just as good as having the vaccine? Why aren't we paying attention to that? And the other thing is, this is really madness. We're turning frontline customer service employees into the vaccine police. And as your guest mentioned earlier, in terms of like, are we going to be calculating, oh, I'm sorry, it's only been 5 months and 12 days since, or 6 months and 2 days since you had your booster. Are we really thinking that frontline customer service employees are the people that we should be employing for this?
All right. Thank you for that, Joseph. I'm going to take it back now. The first part of Joseph's call, we addressed this on Ask the Doctors yesterday. I'm not going to go through all of the fact-checking, but Joseph's not correct. The Israel study, that's something different. I don't know. Telling you straight up. But the rest of that, not correct. However, Emma, I am interested in this question of the strain and stress of frontline employees, workers in restaurants, now having to essentially police this. Talk about that.
It is stressful. I mean, we as restaurant employees, we do take a lot of responsibility for what happens in every aspect of the restaurant. So our guest safety is always the most important thing in our business. And if checking somebody's vaccine card is going to be the thing that keeps our staff and our guests safe, then that's what we're going to do. You know, we also take liability with serving alcohol. We take liability with checking IDs to make sure that, you know, people aren't underage and drinking. We take liability in making sure that everybody feels comfortable when they're in the building. So, yes, this is stressful, but it's even more stressful to not know if everybody that you're in contact with is being safe and is vaccinated.
Go ahead. I didn't know you weren't done. Go for it.
I think, honestly, it is a stressful aspect of everybody having to check vaccine cards. But the most stressful thing is working in a restaurant where you're putting your own life at risk.
Yeah. Yeah. Nancy, I was thinking about this. I was driving the other day, came to a four-way stop and thought, well, we can't have a police officer police every single four-way stop sign in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We have to rely on each other to collaborate, to say it is unsafe if I drive through that stop sign when it's not my turn. It does seem like we can't be asking our restaurants to police this. We need to be asking people to voluntarily cooperate to keep each other safe. How good as citizens are your customers being to each other and your staff?
You know, I would say as a restaurant owner, you're always focused on the negative, right? I mean, like every negative Yelp review, anytime somebody says something that they, you know, disappointed in an experience, you seem to focus on that. And I would say that maybe, you know, out of, you know, two dozen, maybe one guest is frustrated by, you know, the request for even a mask. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that in the end, when you're in our industry, we are training our employees to be hospitable, to be gracious. Yes, absolutely, we can do that for you. You know, we never train these individuals to just say no. And since the beginning of this pandemic, our frontline workers have had to do that. You know, no, we can't serve you. No, you need to keep your mask on. No, you can't do this, right? And it's been exhausting for sure. I think that this step, when it comes to an ID and vaccination or a picture of your vaccination, it's going to be a hurdle. And we totally understand that. And part of MRU's desire to be at the table with Michelle Wu was to be able to give her maybe some direction on how we're feeling about it and how we potentially think we can execute it. You know, our industry is very much, you know, led by the Board of Health. And so if public health is saying, and our leadership is saying vaccinations are the next step, the only thing we can do is just try to have a seat at the table and be able to educate and try to get these individuals to understand how it's going to work in our restaurants. And not all of our all of our questions have been answered, and we're going to continue to do the work to try to get these answers.
So I want to grab a couple of shout outs, excuse me, from listeners now, 800-423-8255. Karen's on the line in Brookline. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much. Landwehr Cafe is my go-to, whether I'm eating in, I'm dining out, I'm taking takeout. I feel safe there. I love the menu. And if I can't travel to Israel now, at least I can go up to Cleveland Circle or Audubon Circle, where there are two locations. Gotta love Landwehr Cafe.
So they're the ones you're trying to help stay open. Excellent. Thanks, Karen. Daryl, how about you? Daryl's in Lincoln.
Yes, Uncle Chung's in Framingham. I have celiac disease. I have kids with all kinds of allergies and a father with that had high blood pressure, and they do a great job of like catering to those, you know, with those kind of issues with gluten-free food and fantastic quality. So we go there every week to try to support them, keep them moving.
At dine-in or carry-out, Daryl?
Mostly carry-out now.
All right. Thank you very much. So, listeners, who are you trying to help stay open? 1-800-423-8255. Are you dining in? Are you carrying out? Is that changing again as the COVID and Omicron landscape changes around us? So, Emma, I'm going to come back to you here. You know, in getting ready to talk to you guys today, I was just thinking so much about how hard it must have been already. I can't imagine what it's like to have not only your own livelihood on the line, but the livelihood of all of your employees as well. 2 years into this, staffing shortages, inflation, supply shortages, how hard is it to stay open?
I feel like that's kind of a trick question. It has been exhausting. Once the vaccine rollout happened, there really was this light at the end of the tunnel. You know, we were fully staffed. Our staff was fully vaccinated. Once that happened, we really thought that we were on the up and up. And again, you know, business was great. People, once they were vaccinated, were feeling comfortable about going out again. It's incredibly frustrating to feel like we're back at the beginning, but we're 2 years into this. At this point, you know, there's no giving up. We've already been through this before. You know, we've already gone through a pandemic winter. We know what we need to do to stay open. We know what works and what doesn't work. We know that, you know, we're a neighborhood spot and people are going to order takeout and they're going to fight to make sure their neighborhood restaurants stay open. But now more than ever, with, you know, government funding not necessarily coming back to help us, we need the help of our community in order to stay open. We can't do it without every single person fighting for independently owned restaurants.
And Nancy, I'm picking up on a couple of things Emma said there. If a restaurant, for example, has not at this point learned how to pivot or been able to, maybe because of the nature of their food or their service or the type of restaurant, been able to pivot to takeout, is it too late? Can they do that now? Can they change the menu? Is it an imperative in this next pandemic winter we're entering now?
Well, I think we've been pretty resilient. And honestly, I think that's the difference between how we're handling Omicron and where we're going into this third year, as opposed to where we started. I think we've learned a lot about ourselves as operators, and we've established, you know, this team that is, you know, again, resilient and strong and willing to do what it takes. And I think that ghost kitchens and conceptually creating menus that are more geared towards takeout has been something that people now realize, like, I can do, and maybe even grown from those concepts and has started to establish them already within their, you know, four walls and their brick and mortar. So I do think there's potential there, but I will say, you know, federal aid, the initial request to replenish the RR to fill the RRF, back when it was first provided to us through the SBA, the number was a real number, and it was shorted. And obviously, because it was shorted, many people that applied were shorted as well.
And I'm sorry, just explain for our listeners, and honestly for me to make sure I understand what you're saying, what does shorted mean?
So the RRF initially, so this is a replenishment, a restaurant revitalization fund that was put in place and established between several different legislators, as well as national organizations like the National Restaurant Association, Independent Restaurant Coalition, that came together during the pandemic. And the idea was that we would, get money into certain restaurant groups, structures, you know, smaller than large corporate. And the applications went through, and I think they honored about 60 billion of it, but they left roughly about 46 billion out there.
Okay, thanks for that. All right, I'm going to go back to the phones at least one more time here. Elias on the line in Brookline. Elias, go ahead.
Hey there. Just wanted to pass on our support for Audubon Bar. Actually, it was great to hear Emma on there, and Jay, Sergio, Riley, everybody over there has been supporting us through the pandemic with Taco Tuesdays, and ever since my wife and I actually went on our first date there back in 2016.
Okay, that you warmed my heart, even if you didn't warm Emma's, and I bet you did. Elias, Emma, how does it feel to hear that?
That's very sweet. Thank you so much for your support. We couldn't do any of it without people like you.
All right, let's hear from one more. We've got Joan in Cambridge. Go ahead, Joan.
I want to do a shout out for Juliet. You know, when the pandemic first hit, they were very creative. They tried to do Zooms. They're wonderful cooks and great bakers.
It's great to have that shout out too. Thanks. So Joan, giving a shout to Juliet in Somerville. All right. So coming back to you, Nancy and Emma, what do you need next? Right. So many communities, several are preparing now to follow suit, taking votes to follow suit with Boston, potentially having proof of vaccination. The governor has said no statewide mask mandate, but is advising people to wear masks indoors. Vaccines, boosters, test kits coming from the federal government at home. What's the most important next thing, just briefly, for you, Emma?
Money.
All right, then.
I mean, we need support, you know. We need to be supported through the winter. Our staff needs to be supported. Our undocumented immigrants who don't receive government assistance need to be supportive. Our servers and bartenders that make $3 an hour need to be supported. There's a lot that goes into what the restaurant industry is and what it takes to operate a restaurant, you know, throughout a winter. And if people don't feel comfortable coming into our establishment and we're not making any money, our staff isn't making any money. So we need to be supported through the winter. And that doesn't mean just, you know, loans to independent restaurants. That means supporting every employee that works in the restaurant organization and community as a whole.
All right, we're going to make that the drop the mic moment. That is Emma Hollander, their managing partner of the Starlight Management Company, along with Nancy Caswell, president of the group Massachusetts Restaurants United and owner of Brine and Oak and Rowan. Emma, Nancy, thanks so much.
Thank you.